If you were in my part of the country, I would say good morning to you because it still is here, but I'm guessing that's not the case where everybody is. So wherever you are, good to see you. And there are several of us, as you probably can tell, in this, so I can't make eye contact with everybody at the same time, but very, really glad to say hi and very much appreciate you jumping onto this call. What I want to share with you today relates to some research that really has been ongoing, something I've been working on for a number of years, even going back to the time when I was in the national office and serving in the leadership role for the Acts 2 journey, really looking at the leadership styles of pastors, and specifically, how does that affect our efforts? How effectively can we help various types of pastors, and really just kind of looking, as we'll get into this here, why some pastors are able to engage church health strategies more easily or more naturally than others. So there is a document that that Austin, I think, sent out ahead of time. I hope you had a chance to at least maybe take a look at that. If you've got it or want to reference it, I'm going to put it up on the screen here in just a moment to kind of walk you through it so you'll be aware of what it is that that we have. But one of the unique, and there it is for us right now in the chat, if you'd like to open it there at your own machine. One of the unique realities, though, of pastoring is, you know, when we look at styles, leadership styles, you know, of course, there's so many of those tools out there to assess, you know, who we are or how we operate, how we lead. What's interesting is that the role of pastor is one of the few roles where, regardless of where you fit on a schematic or evaluation of your personality or your leadership style, every personality or leadership style is today sitting in a pastor's chair and able to pastor effectively. That's really not the case in most industries. I make use here of the DISC profile. I've been working with the DISC for a number of years, helping congregations and district leadership teams and others improve their effectiveness by understanding their styles. And the reason I choose the DISC is because it is principally aimed at leadership style or work style. That's really what it's about. It's different from Enneagram and all the other tools out there, which are all fine in their own lane. But really, when we talk about how we work and how we lead, that's the sweet spot of the DISC. And so, you know, what's fascinating is in a DISC profile, if I'm looking for a car salesman, there is a specific DISC profile for that. In fact, the DISC is used, if you're not familiar, it is used in numerous industries to establish the kind of person that we're looking for, or the kind of person that is most likely to be successful in a certain role. So the car salesman has a profile, the accountant has a profile, and I promise you the car salesman and the accountant are not the same profiles. What you're looking for in those individuals. But when we get into pastoring, what I find fascinating, and you know this, if you've traveled, worked with a number of pastors, you know, anytime you're doing an Acts 2 journey with a group of churches, you're looking at a vast array of leadership styles among the pastors that are in the room. And the truth is that I could offer you multiple examples of very effective pastors from each of the primary leadership styles. And so starting with that understanding and beginning to ask the question, okay, what do these pastors look like? And really, how does that affect what we do? I began to think about this, as I said, back when I was in the office. I was actually at a conference for an organization I'm a part of called the Society of Church Consultants. And Gary McIntosh had just written his book, or just released his book, There's Hope for Your Church. And in that, he talks about those who can revitalize a church or pastors who are successful at that. And he mentions the DISC, and he references a couple of the two of the four personalities, that these are probably the ones that are best suited for revitalization. Well, I reacted a bit negatively to that because I've been working with pastors like he has, but I've been working with pastors for quite a while, and I know many examples of all four leadership styles effectively pastoring. And so had the opportunity in that setting to sit down with him over breakfast, and also another fellow, Aubrey Malfers, a name you probably would know, who's written so much on strategic planning for the church. He was at the table as well. And so I was being respectful and nice and enjoying having the opportunity to connect with these gentlemen. I didn't want to mess that up, but I had to ask. I said, ask Gary, can you tell me, I saw what you wrote in your book. I said, but I'm wondering, is the reason that you suggest these two personality styles fit church revitalization best, is that because that's truly the only ones who can win at this game? Or is that because the strategies we give them fit them more naturally, and we need to find strategies, or we need to find ways to help other personalities? And he was very open to that conversation. And in fact, Dr. Malfers jumped in right away, and you know, he was doing some thoughts, some research in that vein as well. But it really kept launching me into this, what do we need to understand? And so this special report that's titled Exploring the Impact of the Pastor's Leadership Style, and at some point, I think we may at least revise the formatting or the design or something as we make it generally available to everybody else. But this is really written to you as a consultant. This is written very much from the perspective of me talking to others who do what I do, working with churches. And what we're looking at here is, what do we need to be thinking about as we engage pastors? So I'm going to share my screen and get into this just a little bit. If you have something that occurs to you, a question or something, you need to slow me down on something, please use the chat, because there are more of us than I can see on a screen, so I won't see you waving at me. So if you'll hit the chat for me, I will do that. I'm still admitting people since you've made me the host, Austin, so great to have more and more jumping in. That's wonderful. But let me share my screen if I can here, if I can find the right one. Here it is. This document, of course, looks like this at the beginning. And as we move down through it a little bit, there's some introductory stuff that's basically talking about the nature of the report, why we need to study this, what the value potentially can be here. There is a segment here, why did I choose the disc? I'm not going to waste your time with that in this moment. You and I can discuss that separately if you'd like, but explaining some of that. If you're not familiar with the disc profile, let me just real quickly, this is an incredibly oversimplified presentation of the disc profile. And of course, if you've taken the disc, you know that it's an elaborate self-evaluation, self-assessment tool. I love it. I hope you'll do that. If you've never taken it, hey, send me a note. I can send you a link to the opportunity to jump into some of that. I can do that to a limited way, but I have some of those pre-purchased, and I'm glad to share a link to the opportunity for you to get more detailed information. When I'm working with churches, when I'm working with districts, I'm certainly asking them to do a more elaborate evaluation than what this is going to do. This is a very simple, just a very simple explanation or kind of summary of what the disc ultimately demonstrates. And it identifies four different leadership styles. You'll see the DISC, if you start in the upper left and go around the quadrants, the disc profile. And this is really looking at people, again, oversimplified, whether they are more people-focused or task-focused, and whether they are aggressive, where something comes up and they dive in, or they're more responsive in the sense that they're more helper driven than the one that necessarily has to be in the driver's chair. And so, sorry, I'm trying to get a few other folks that are jumping in here with us. Okay, so the disc in the disc profile, the D. Sometimes we use words like dominant, driven, but this is a task focused, aggressive, action-oriented person. This is the guy that's going to solve it, and going to. And I love my great friend Ron McManus. I'm not sure if Ron's on the call right now, but when I think of a D, I think of Ron McManus, because Ron is a very strong, aggressive leader, very task-focused. He's good at loving people, but he's really good at getting the job done. Very strategic leader. Next to that is the eye. And the eye is also aggressive or action-oriented, but very people-focused. The eye is going to be a great motivator, really, you know, really effective at rallying the troops. And our fearless leader, Alton Garrison, is who I think of when I think about an eye. Individual who definitely has that element of leadership focus in his skill set. The S and the C are different in that they are helpers. They are responsive. Not that they're not leaders, but they are not necessarily the dominant aggressors in the room when something needs to be done. And so an S is a response-oriented people person. As we're going to see here, the S is the ultimate relational leader, if you will. The C, on the other hand, can be analytical because the C is going to often be either a creator, a creative, or a very detailed analytic. And so the C is a task-oriented person that may not take over the room to get the job done, but will contribute all sorts of of the things that we need in order to get the job done. So pastors come from all four areas. And the truth about the DISC, just some numbers for you, just so you'll know, about 9% of the population, according to Maxwell DISC studies that they have done, 9% of the population land in the D column, 11% of the population in the I column, 67% of the population are S's, and 13% can be found in among the C's. So that's 20% are above the line, and 80% are in the SC areas. And when we work with pastors and looking at them, while there've been some studies done in this regard, not aware of a holistic one, but the truth is that pastors follow about the same, roughly the same percentage. About 80% of pastors are S's and C's, about 20% are D's and I's. And this is something that McIntosh references in that book as well. Now, Gary McIntosh stated in his book that D's and I's, because you got to be aggressive in order to turn a church around, they're the ones best suited to church revitalization. And that part of why I was reacting to that was I was thinking, oh, I hope that's not the case, because we don't have enough of them to turn churches around. The churches that need to be revitalized today are most likely being pastored by S's and C's. There are some D's and I's in those settings. I know in rural America, another study that was done identified that 91% of pastors in rural areas are S's or C's. What I was saying to Dr. McIntosh was, we've got to figure this out, because everywhere we go, S's and C's fill the pastor chair in churches that need revitalization. And so, you know, I was reflecting on this, realizing that likely, and I think this bears out, the majority of district leaders and those that rise to leadership in many of our elected settings and others are going to predominantly be D's and I's. The majority of those who speak at district council or who are, you know, leading in various settings at the national level, the majority are going to typically be D's and I's. And yet the overwhelming majority of the individuals that we seek to influence are not. They are the S or C category. And so if you've ever had a pastor kind of, you know, express, I liked what I heard, but I can't do that. Or this feeling that I cannot do what the D or the I is doing, or I can't lead in that manner. Well, that's kind of the challenge that many are feeling. Or if you've had a pastor say after a session you've done, oh, praise God, finally something for us or something for me. Often what they're saying is that I feel like I can engage what you shared, and probably what you shared was an S or a C type strategy that lends itself to who they are. And so anyway, this report begins to ask that question: what do we need to know in order to help these pastors? I also want to say, when we're breaking down individuals, most all of us are a blending of more than one of these styles. Only about 4% of the population are exclusively one and not any of the other three. OK, Okay, so about 16% of the population, actually three of these styles are relevant to who they are. About 80% of the population, two of these are actually what we would find are valid for those pastors. So what we're looking at here is which is dominant, which is the most pronounced one. And that's what we would generally expect would be the most natural leadership style. So for me, for example, I'm in that 16%. I am a DCS. I have no I in my life. I have zero I. That's really not who I am. I am a DCS. If you've done the DISC profile, you've probably got a sense of where you land in that and where you fit. What I want you to see, first of all, Austin, if you could bring up that, if you are controlling, if you could bring up that where I was right there, just back to the graphic of the four quadrants there on page six. Sure. You could do that for me. One of the things that this really also helps us with is much of the source of leadership conflict that pastors face is when they are trying to deal with somebody who is in the opposite corner of their primary leadership style. So S's struggle with D's. S's are relational. They don't move quickly. They want to make sure everybody's okay before they take aggressive action, where D's, especially in the extreme, they charge in and they go for it. They get it done. And hey, if you don't like it, hold on or get off the bus, you know, in the extreme, okay? And so D's and S's struggle with each other. In fact, I've dealt with that this weekend. I was working with a congregation in Kansas City where the pastor is an S leader, and he just went through a congregational vote after 18 years. Every 3 years, he gets the joy of this process. And he just went through a congregational vote. The vote was strong, but there were a few folks that, and including one particular couple on his leadership team that voted against it and have expressed that directly to him. And as I got acquainted with these friends, guess what? They were very strong, very high D personalities. And so, you know, I was trying to help the pastor realize that their issue with you is likely a matter of style. It's not personal. It's you're not aggressive enough for them. You're not moving fast enough. Because they're, in fact, I believe on just about any team, the majority of conflict that happens relates to information like this. I's and C's struggle with each other a bit. Again, simply because they are completely different. They are wired on the opposite side of the quadrants. I won't take more time on that, but if you want to chat more about that, I'm very glad to engage that with you individually. As you move through this report, though, if you go to page 9, Austin, just to let everybody see this, what we did was we've broken down what ultimately are going to be 18 areas where we look at these four personalities and how they operate differently. Again, pastors can be in any of these four areas, and they can be very successful pastors, but they're going to lead very, very differently. And that's why, you know, very likely, I'm going to lead very differently than my predecessor. I'm going to lead very, very differently, you know, many times than some of the other pastors in my section. And so, you know, when we come to churches with a one size fits all strategy for how to turn the church around, we've got to be ready to adapt our thinking and our processes and how we encourage. There are going to be some guys in the room that engage some part of what we're saying very easily, and they're going to struggle with another part. There are going to be other guys that it's flipped for them. For example, I can tell you right now, I'll show it to you here in the report in a minute, but your D's and I's in the room, when you talk vision, that's their wheelhouse. They are vision-based leaders typically. They have no problem with producing vision. But when you start talking vision to S's and even to C's, many of them get very uncomfortable with that because they feel like they're being asked to produce something that is really not how they operate or how they lead. Now, I'm going to show you, I mean, we have to help them. They need to lead with vision. We're not throwing vision out, but we have to realize some guys in the room are struggling with this. And S's and C's typically tend to be more values-based leaders. They lead from an internal sense, not an external sense. And so they struggle when you say to them, pick the hill you're going to. But they can certainly answer the question when you talk about what kind of people should we be. Whereas my experience in the Acts 2 journey, sometimes I have trouble getting my D's and I's to really focus in and do the good work on values, because they get vision and they want to go right to strategy, because that's how they're wired. Where my S's and C's love the values stage. In fact, I can lose them there. They can stay there. They love it so much. So what you see here, and what we've done throughout this report, is in 18 different areas. This is the first one, Leadership Foundation. What you're seeing are the four different ways these four styles lead. The D is a strategist. The D loves strategy. The D loves putting the plan together. You know, where are we going? Here's how we get there. The D thrives in that kind of an environment. They are a strategically based leader. Whereas the I is a motivationally based leader. Remember, this is the people leader, aggressive people person, but the I is going to rally the troops. The I gets the job done by engaging people, raising an army, however you want to articulate that. The S is a relational leader. The others, I'm not saying in any way that the others are not, but this is where the S really leads. The S wins the closer you get to him or to her. That relationship, that connection, that personal interaction, that's the S's strength. They're incredibly good at this. Typically, they're very aware of what people are feeling. Where if I'm in a high D mode, I'm just going to confess it for me. I'm confessing it for other Ds. I'm not aware of what other people are feeling. And if I've got something I need to get done, I may not even be caring what other people are feeling. it's about getting the job done. So you can see that. And the C then is very motivated by doing what is right. An ethical based leader, driven by what we ought to do. And so you'll see that breakdown there in figure two. And I'm going to take you really to the back of the report where I summarize all 18. And Austin, if you want to just help us there on page 53, the very last page, because I don't need to walk you chapter by chapter through this in the sense of all that's written in the middle. I really hope you will read what's written in the middle for each of these, not just jump into the final chart, but I want to just kind of give you a sense of what this entire report covers and then let you interact, ask any questions you might have. Relative to some of this, but you'll see if you're there on page 53, thank you, Austin. What you'll see there is the D's favorite room is the boardroom. The D will do well in the pulpit, but loves the boardroom. This is where we get the work done. Where the I loves the podium, leads very well from the podium, leads very well. The S I put in here leads from the restaurant booth because it's there in the coffee shop. It's there in the one-on-one or one-on-a-few settings where the S is really in their element. And they can lead from the pulpit. We're not suggesting they can't, but that's not where they lead from the best. And you know, if you've done a number of Acts 2 Journey events and you're looking around the room and you know, you've got certain individuals that you know are going to be strong leaders when they get up in front, and you've got others that's not really their best setting. They're important pastors. They have an opportunity to lead their church forward, and they can, but it's just they're not at their best in a full room. They're at their best in more of a relational setting. And the C, the passion for the C, typically comes out when they are teaching, when they're explaining, when they're, you know, the classroom, at the chalkboard, whatever it is, because they break things down so well. And so again, you see there in the third column, kind of already alluded to some of this, how they lead, what they're strongest in, what's driving them inside. The D leader is being driven, you know, wants to do what needs to be done, where the I oftentimes wants to not just do what needs to be done, but wants to do it better than everybody else or do more than everybody else, wants to hit the top of that mountain. The S wants to do what we can, because for the S, oftentimes the priority is not so much what we're doing, but who we're doing it with. And the fact that we're working together is a greater priority to the S many times than the task itself. Remember, people person who moves slow enough to make sure that everybody's doing all right. And the C is passionate. I've worked with leaders who are predominantly C, they are passionate about doing right things, doing not just doing it the right way, but doing things that we ought to be doing in certain ministry areas. These kind of leaders are passionate when they lead efforts to address human trafficking or to right wrongs in our culture or whatever that is. Now, a C, as you know, if they get a little bit fixated on maybe something they'd be best left alone, the C can also rip up your Facebook page telling you what you ought to fix, or, you know, being critical of national whatever, you know, prominent ministries, because they're fixing everything. They want to make sure we do what's right. What I wanted to spend a little bit of time on in this chart, I don't want to spend a lot of time on all of these, but this number five that I've already referenced, because it's so relevant to what we do. And that is this idea of vision-based and values-based leaders. In our very first training event that we filmed back at SAGU years ago in launching the training, we kind of introduced this thought, and I could sense the room really connecting with this significantly, because this understanding of vision-based leaders versus values-based leaders. I was having a conversation several years ago now with a brand newly elected district superintendent who had asked me to sit down with him and look at his values that he had constructed as he was ready to step in and lead his district. And as we were talking, this is where a lot of this particular moment really became clear, because this leader was replacing a very, very strong vision-based leader. In fact, a leader that was known for vision. And this leader saw himself very differently, and I think that was accurate, that he was a different kind of leader, very much a shepherd, a pastoral style leader, not necessarily the rah-rah, we've got to hit the top of the hill kind of leader. And they had a vision statement, or they had a statement in their particular district that stated their overall goal was to hit, and there was this extraordinary number of healthy churches. We want to hit, and I won't get into the number. I don't want you to go looking for which district it is, okay? But we want to hit, you know, hundreds of healthy congregations. And I asked this leader, I said, when you look at that statement, the number healthy congregations, what word jumps out to you? What word feels like the most important word to you? And he said immediately, well, healthy. And I said, now think about your predecessor. If I were to ask him that same question, what word do you think jumps at him? And immediately he identified that his predecessor's focus would have been that number, that big number. And I said, that's the difference between, or illustrates the difference between vision leaders and values leaders. Vision leaders are driven by what they see out beyond themselves, the opportunity, the hill to climb, the funds to raise, the challenge to meet. Vision-based leaders are externally motivated. Something inside stirs when they see a challenge out here, where values-based leaders tend to find their motivation more internally, in the sense of what needs to be going on inside of us. What kind of people should we be? And now they're both headed in a right direction. It's just how they get there varies significantly. And so as we're dealing with the Acts 2 journey, for example, and this is where some of you are familiar with the Amanda game we play, in that is very much a values-driven exercise for finding vision within here. What's coming out of you? So, you know, a lot of pastors, as I said, about potentially 80% of them, are not going to be able to simply look at their church, or, you know, look at their and dream of a day when we are this big, or, you know, vision to them feels like I'm picking a destination, and I don't really know the destination. I just know who we need to be now, you know, who we need to become, and trusting that, you know, if we've got a whole bunch of healthy congregations, we'll end up producing hundreds of them, rather than thinking we could get hundreds of congregations, we'll try then to make them healthy. It's just two different wirings. And so as you're leading a journey, very, very important to be aware that 80% of your room probably are values-based leaders, and they're going to need more exercises to help turn what's in here, what's inside them, into into the vision that, you know, this is one of the reasons why I very much insist to the pastor, and I was talking to the pastor this weekend, if you're not crying over this vision, if you're not so passionate that you can't talk about it without stirring your emotions, then it's not a vision you can use to move your church forward. If it's not passionate inside you, it's not coming from a deep enough place in order for it to really be able to turn your congregation around. It just becomes a slogan on the wall. Now, a vision-based leader can lead with a slogan on the wall. I don't want them to, but they can because they ooze vision themselves. They're natural in that vein. But values-based leaders, they've got to be driven by more than just we're going to love God, love people, change the world. Something's got to get more specific and more passionate as to what it is their congregation uniquely, how they're going to live that out. And so that's one application here. I should pause there. I want to take a look here and see anything that might be coming up, or if you have a question or anything that you'd like relative to vision-based, values-based leaders before I jump anywhere else on this chart. Please understand, as we're talking about this, we're not talking about needing a separate strategy than the Acts 2 journey. Everything we need is there. We're just talking about how do we help pastors be successful when they are different. Because, to be honest with you, the Acts 2 journey was developed by D's and I's. In fact, the national team, the Ron McManuses, Alton Garrisons, myself, we're D's and I's. I have some of those other things in me, but at the end of the day, push comes to shove, we land there. So we have to realize that 80% of the room potentially is not us, and we're trying to help them lead effectively where they're at. If we're asking them to be like us or to lead like we lead, 80% of the room is very likely not going to be able to be successful with that. So we've got to get inside their head. The question's being asked here. Don's asking, you recommend one's leadership team has some of each of these profiles. In general, yes, as a general statement, we need them all. Now, helping them learn how to work together, like I mentioned this church this weekend, where I've got an S pastor who's intimidated by the D on his team. And that can be the case for a values-based leader. Sometimes can be intimidated by the more aggressive styles of the D or I that are on the team. And yet a big part of why the Acts 2 journey succeeds where it does is because of the team and because we're bringing more to the table than just the pastor's own leadership style. So if we can help them work together, respect each other, bring what they bring uniquely to the table, then yes, I absolutely would want to see every one of these. And the truth is, if the population is, as we describe here, predominantly S's and C's, your team is going to likely be made up of a fair number of S's and C's. You probably, in most cases, won't have a team full of D's or a team full of I's. And God help the church if they're all D's or all I's, if we're all the same thing, that's not going to be an ideal scenario. But it's a great question. Moving down here, just a couple of other things, just to highlight real quick these differences you can look at. A D measures leadership by production. You know, that the D's not impressed with your title. The D wants to know what you've done. You know, what have you done? That's what the D is going to be after. But the I, however, in fact, John Maxwell has, certainly taught all of us that leadership is influence. But my estimation is, while that's not wrong by any stretch, that is a very I-focused definition of what leadership is, because that's how the I leads, is predominantly through influence. Now, influence is certainly there, but S's and C's probably internally argue with that just a little bit, because they end up with influence, but they build in other ways. They don't set out to target influence. They set out to establish trust, or they set out to lead with integrity. And so their leadership is based on other things. You'll see top priority there. You can see how the D will put purpose ahead of people. The I says, no, purpose needs people. The S says people come before purpose. The S will sometimes move slower than others want to, because the S wants to make sure that everybody's doing okay, that everybody, that's a relational leader who can feel the room. And so they're not going to go faster than the people, typically than the people can accommodate. And ultimately the C believes that people need purpose. And so there's a way that's broken down. They have key abilities. You can see there, key ability of the I is to celebrate. That's why we all love so much hanging out with Alton, because life's a party everywhere he goes. And we love to celebrate the great things that are happening. And I mean, it's fun to be a part of that team. You see other things there, how they take action. That's a very important one. How do these leaders take, different leaders take action? You can see, I'm looking down here just a little bit. Let me getting down here into some of the fears and the vulnerabilities. These become vulnerable or frustrated, or they struggle if they get stuck in a management structure where they're not leading, where they're simply trying to maintain. D's love they love the challenge. They want the challenge. They love change. They want to lead to a new day. So just maintaining is going to create a frustrating element that puts the D in a more of a vulnerable place. Where the I, again, is a people-focused leader, isolation is not fun, does not bring out the best in the I. The S is more vulnerable in times of change, because the S is trying to manage relationships. And of course, this is a big part of our, you know, of our journey here, is helping S leaders learn how to lead change in their church. And for the C, disorder creates chaos in the heart and mind of most Cs, whether they're creative or they're an analytic. Looking down here, you can look at some of the rest of these. If you ask them, number 14, what they're weak in, they will acknowledge. That, you know, a D will acknowledge, hey, mercy's not my thing. Where an I will acknowledge, hey, I don't want to get into the details. I'm not a detail person. An S will struggle to make decisions because, again, trying to make sure everybody's doing okay. And a C will sometimes lead us into a lot of activity that's not productive, but a lot of what we'd call unproductive busyness. That sounds real negative, and it kind of is, but it's, I don't really intend it that way. A couple of other things, and then I'll stop. Number 16, this, as I was really, really looking at this, these leaders, their highest grasp of what it means to be a Christian, while they're not going to disagree with any of the other guys, the Great Commission is, it's not hard to get a D motivated by the Great Commission, is to go to make disciples. The I, certainly committed to the Great Commission, but the I's word, and I want to change what I've typed here a little bit, Austin, because it's not just gather. The I is all about believe. The I is believe. It's that call to put your faith, to believe that we can do this, to believe in Christ, to Christianity. To the I is heavy on the belief. Believe God for what you need God to bring to your life. The I is very focused on faith. The S is going to very much be focused on the great commandment, and everything is all about love. And the C is going to say, hey, yeah, it's all about love, but you're not loving if you're not obeying. And so they bring a different priority as they look at the principal idea of what it means to be a Christian. And that affects the way they lead. It also affects how they preach, everything that they're targeting when they draw people into the altar. You know, they're looking for these priorities tend to fill their hearts in a little bit greater way than the others. I did want to comment on the end, particularly number 17, just to make sure that it's not misunderstood. Because in Ephesians chapter 4, we recognize that there are at least four, maybe five different offices in the church in leadership: apostle, prophet, evangelist, and pastor, teacher, or pastor and teacher, however you want to do that. I'm not going to argue with you. But that there are these different roles that we recognize, or these different functions that we recognize among those that God has given to the church as leaders. I am not in any way saying, please hear me, please underscore this. This is so important to me because I don't want to be misunderstood. What that shows us in Ephesians 4 is that we need them all in order for the church to be equipped to do the work of ministry, that we need all of these leadership gifts functioning. In the same way, we need all of these kind of pastors if long-term the church is going to be effective. And so I am not saying that these are all apostles. My goodness, no. I'm not saying anything like that. But what I am saying is that the D leadership style lends itself or can be similar to the apostolic or the prophetic in how they operate. There's some connection there. It's not one equals the other. Please hear that. But there's some parallels there. As the I, definitely evangelistic, the I, again, the call to believe, priority of the good news, raising an army, drawing people. The I is often, many times, demonstrates the trait of a biblical evangelist. Certainly the apostolic is there as well, potentially. The S, pastor, teacher, shepherd, there's a definite connection with many S's to that. Again, Ephesians 4, those are gifts God raises up. Those are not natural abilities. Those are gifts God raises up in the lives of people. So we're not equating them with natural leadership style. It's just there's some similar parallels. And then the C, certainly bringing what is right, is very much a part of the work of the prophetic and of the prophet as well as the teacher. So the last piece of that is just interesting to note that over the last 50, 60, 70 years, when you said pastor, you were meaning different ones of these. Because back in the 60s and 70s, if you were around back then, I was just a kid in children's church, but if you were around back then and you said pastor, you were probably talking, the 30s to the 50s, I wasn't on the scene yet. But if you're talking about pastor, you were probably talking about the neighborhood parish leader. You're talking about the relational shepherd who guides our typically smaller congregation. That was the S. The S was what we meant by pastor in the 30s through the 50s. Maybe before that, I don't have enough research to go back further. But in the 60s and 70s, in the midst of that tumultuous time, we needed the church to speak more profoundly into the moral fabric of our culture, and that was a little bit more the wheelhouse of the C. And so pastor in the 60s and 70s was often our moral voice. While the others continue to pastor and pastor effectively, the idea or the label pastor made us think of C's in the 60s and 70s. In the 80s and 90s, it shifted a bit to the I. Now churches are getting larger. The individuals who can effectively lead larger groups and pastor well, who have that skill set, well, that fits the I very well. It doesn't mean that we got rid of S's and C's and D pastors. It's just when we said pastor, now we're thinking face of the franchise, the individual who is leading, the leader of our church. And then some maybe because of some of the high profile difficulties that were experienced with some leaders, but the D, the strategic leader, kind of took center stage. When we say pastor today, we're talking about the leader of our local church organization. We're talking about the strategic leader that guides our multi-sites and all the strategy. Again, when we say pastor. So again, all four continue to pastor at all times. It's just when we think of what a pastor is in the main, people have thought of these different profiles. And my expectation is that over the next handful of years or more, we're going to see the current rising generation's priority on relationship and authenticity kind of pull pastoring a little bit more back toward the S again, because that's that pastor's relational strength. But again, everybody's going to be pastor. All these are going to be pastoring and pastoring effectively in all generations. It's just when you think of the word pastor, over time here, we've drawn different pictures in the dictionary of what that looks like or what we would expect that means. So again, sorry, I've talked way more than I intended. I've gone 45 minutes without a breath. I welcome interaction, questions. My reason, and in fact, when you get to the concluding area of this, what I've done is, first of all, I confess that as a researcher, it's not my job necessarily to tell you what to do with this, except I'm a consultant too, so I got to figure this out. The researcher focuses on the past and the present reality, but all of us together need to figure out what's this mean for what we do as we move forward. And so I've offered you some possible next steps here in the back of this, things to think about. These are from my thoughts, But you'll notice if when you get to page 52, I've left it open up. I've left it open there for some possible next steps that you would come up with, the things that you identify that, hey, I need to be thinking more about this, or here's how I want to make use of some of this information, or how I want to apply this. And bottom line is, we got to figure this out together. We want, this is not a, you know, somebody sitting in an office somewhere solving all this. We've got to, what I've tried to present is the reality that we're looking at, but how we address it needs to be an us type of response. And so I want to encourage you to be thinking about this as you can, if this strikes you and feels important to you, sitting down with others, sharing the report, talking with leaders you work with. You know, what are we going to do with this? How's this going to affect our specific effort of working with congregations?
Alton, you have any thoughts for us here as we close out?
Thank you, Mike. It was a great, great, great presentation. There's so much there to look at, to think about. I just want to let y'all know that Mike Clarenceau has a new book out on change. Mike, how can we get that book?
Well, it's available through Amazon. It's called Subject to Change, What People Want Their Pastor to Know Before Asking Them to Change. So it's a change book written from the input and vantage point of the people who are subject to it. Thank you, Don Rayleigh's holding it up. I've also got it available. I have a website that's clarenceaucommunications.com. And if you want to email me on any subject, I'm just mike@clarenceaucommunications.com. If you want to take that approach, I'm very glad for you to do that. My wife and I have that site together with our other resources. So again, very glad to interact with you on any of this or any other topic. If I can be of help to you or just want to talk about something, you can get me at mike@clarenceaucommunications.com.